Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Welcome, everybody, on today's episode of Big Blend Radio. We're going to be talking about the photographer Robert Mapplethorpe, controversial photographer, very well celebrated as well, and he is the subject of the film Mapplethorpe, the directory where on, you know, digitally on April 2nd, and you're going to want to watch this. It's really well done. Really tells the story of his life and who he was. And we're very excited. We've got Tanya Ortega back on the show, sitting in as co-host. And you know Tanya is a photographer, and also you know her on our shows as the founder of the National Parks Art. Welcome back. How are you doing?
Thank you. Fantastic. Great. I am so honored to be on this particular show with Andy and the two of you.
Yeah, and Andy Zimmer, she is a filmmaker and also director of the film. A brilliant, brilliant, everyone's got to go see it. So welcome, Andy. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm great.
Hey. Just to get started, you know, Robert Mapplethorpe is iconic. A lot of people know him. Some people may not know him. Do you think he is still as controversial today as he?
I mean, you got to take into consideration that he was picturing, you know, very extreme sexual, you know, actions back in the day when, gay life was not at all acceptable. There was no LGBTQ. There were no initials like that, and there was certainly no imagery in the mainstream approaching that. I think he's got to be far less controversial today in terms of just the imagery. But, you know, to this day, the NEA struggles to get funding because of what happened with The Perfect Moment and that show around the time he died, right after he died, where, you know, the museum director was taken away and Dennis Berry was taken away in handcuffs. So, and still to this day, government funding in the United States is difficult to come by because of, you know, they funded Mapplethorpe's work. So, but he made photography a collectible art form, and he did manage, he won. You know, he really did manage to get people to embrace his work and see the beauty that he saw, which I think was really his driving motivation.
It's interesting about the one part of the movie where he goes and learns about becoming a kid. He did photography with his dad, and I mean, it was always that balance between, you know, the devil and all the evil and non-evil, you know, and the beauty. And you know, it was interesting when, you know, one lady, she goes and gives him a camera and teaches him, like, yeah, you know, it's more than pointing. So poignant about the craft of photography.
I think, you know, for me as a director, as a writer, it was important to kind of imagine, well, why do I see evidence that there's actual, you know, photographs that he took back when he was a child, but then nothing for years and years and years and years. And his dad was an amateur photographer. That was like his big hobby. You know, he had a dark room in the basement. And I thought, you know, it's interesting. I mean, he was an altar boy, Robert, and if you look at his work, it's really, really impossible to imagine there being a Mapplethorpe without the Catholic Church. He was obsessed with the imagery and the ritual, with the iconography of the church, but not necessarily for the reasons that the church would want you to be interested, you know? He saw the inherent sexuality and the beauty in that iconography. And I think that's why, you know, you see angel wings on his picture, on his photograph of the two men in bondage in the gallery. He sees the wings because he really feels like he's making God's work in a way, you know, like he feels like it's Cain and Abel, you know, instead of necessarily two men in bondage in a living room in Manhattan. And I think that kind of, you know, beyond this realm thinking and feeling is what drove a lot of his work, and yet all, at the same time, it made it very, very difficult for him to come out and to realize that he was gay, not only losing the relationship with Patti Smith, but also you know, with his family and with his father. Mm-hmm. So I kind of imagined, and I think that's important to do when you're piecing together a person's life, you know, and you're mm-hmm. trying to kind of delve into the psychology and the motivations. That was important to me to show him as a boy in the church. And kind of to draw the church and the controversy around his work through that lens into the film, you know.
And all the way to the end. Like, all the way to the end, you know.
That's actually the priest. That was the family priest, and that is a biographical fact that the priest, Father Stack, at his mother's request, came to visit him before he died of AIDS, yeah. And and then there is a photograph of Father Stack taken by Robert Mapplethorpe. So I thought it would be really fun to see the photo shoot and see kind of the reversal. Like, well, at this point, you know, may as well get my picture taken by this man. So sorry about that. If you hear that, those are wild peacocks.
Cool.
Oh, well, there you go.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. I never know what Tanya can have in the background since she's in Hawaii. But Tanya, when I first said, you know, we're going to be covering this, this film and Robert Mapplethorpe, I was like, Tanya. So I want to know about your connection with it and how you felt watching it. And I know that you're going to know a lot of the scenes from New York more than what Nancy and I would know of.
Well, I loved the movie, and the wonderful thing about this movie is it's a new perspective for me. Yes, I know the details of Mapplethorpe, but also I have distant relatives in Floral Park, spent a lot of time there. That entire community, this really moves me because I'm afraid to say impetus of his subject matter, with everything that he grew up on, his rock of his life, the church, his family, even that community. I mean, that community is very, very Catholic, very traditional, and very opinionated. And it gave a real sense of emotion in the movie. I connected with this more than anything else I've ever seen on Mapplethorpe. So thank you. For this. I'm getting a little teary-eyed, so I'll turn it back to you guys.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's wonderful to hear.
Wow.
The peacocks heard that, too.
Oh, this is nice. I love this. That's
cool.
I
love
peacocks. We have a cat meow. This is cool. Yeah, we do, too. I know.
Spring has sprung over here.
I know. I was going to say, Mapplethorpe might photograph him. So anyway, sorry, I couldn't resist that. But when you think about the whole Catholic part too, you know, there's Nancy and I've had like our own interesting history of you know, but recently, it was a couple years back, we went to a mission in Tucson, the San Xavier del Bac. It's one of the most preserved Spanish style missions in the country. And actually in North America, and the inside you go in, and we were with a friend of ours, and we're not really, like, we get the giggles because we're just not good at this stuff. And we got in there, and, you know, we were looking, and because when you, and I've photographed the inside of that mission so many times because there's something, and that's what I really got into with his photography too, of how he, those legs with the blood, and I mean, all of that to me was just really fascinating because there is this, like, it's almost in a way when they're looking at what's inside these cathedrals, because it's brutal, and then at the same time it's purity, and it's a really odd mix in regards to looking at it. There's so many deep, dark emotions, and there's so, you know, we're being pure on the side. So I think that was really, really well shown in the film. Like that whole, I don't know, because to me, I go in those places, and this is nothing disturbing. But those things on the wall, just, you know. So I thought what he did with his photos, too, with that, he really looked at it in a different angle. Made me look at a different angle, too. So I thought that was neat, of that whole balance. Did you go in and, I mean, how, where was this part? Because you're saying part of this was kind of put, it, this is like the reworking of this, right? So for this film, what part were you doing, and did you go to, on site into different churches to film that?
No, it was very difficult. Great question. It was very difficult to get a church to allow us in as soon as they heard it was Mapplethorpe and they wanted to see the script. It was not funny at the time. Even a location that I was going to use to shoot where he picks up the magazine, where the magazine. The magazine stand, I found we found a great location, but it was owned by the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church actually owns a lot of older marquees around New York and the boroughs. So, but we did finally find a, Episcopalian church that allowed us to.
Wow.
Thank God for the Episcopalians.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It took a while. We needed a church that was kind of like, you know, liberal. We needed a liberal church. So, we were like, I think it was like the day before we started shooting, and we only had 19 days to shoot the entire film. And we didn't have a church.
Mm.
Still didn't have a church. And
wow.
I just remember riding around in the van going, what are we going to do?
Like, we can't find a church.
Yeah.
It's interesting because in our college, I know, like, they would always bring in women models and they could be naked, and there was never a time, there was a few men models, but they always had little Speedos on. They never brought the men in naked, ever. And so I think that that's just that thing. It's okay for women to be naked, but not men. It's very
interesting.
They have their shirt off and women can't. Men can
walk
around topless.
I didn't get that memo when I was like a teenager. I think at one point I just went through a phase where I was just like, I think they call me the nude guitarist. But
there you go.
A whole other story.
I'm sorry to back up a little bit, but I need a little bit of clarity here. Did you just say that you shot all of this in 19 days?
Yes.
Because the production value and the beauty, even the lighting and the interiors, like, this looks like it would have taken 6 months to shoot. This is really amazing. I can't believe you did it. It took me 4 weeks to do an 8-minute short. This is incredible.
Yeah, it should not have been done in 19 days. That's not good for anybody's health at all. Matt Smith almost exploded, and I wish I had a more inspiring mantra, but my mantra was we just have to get through this. Like, it was like we were taking on, 10-plus pages sometimes a day, and Matt would have to, break up with Patty and leave Edward and go to Drummer Magazine and go experience S&M for the first time and photograph it with Polaroid and also leave art school all in a day, kind of thing, where we were just using locations. We found these incredible locations. But really, I have to hand it to Jonah Markowitz, the production designer, and especially Nancy Schreiber, our DP, who shot gorgeous 16mm, and the scrappy New York crew, who raised the glass to me at the end and said they shot 100 movies in New York, but never with as gritty a tenacious director. My documentary background also really helped. I don't know if you guys know what I typically do, but I make documentaries and I edit them too. So I have a lot of experience with cut points and knowing when I have a good take and, taking scenes and just sucking taking the dialogue out. I mean, I even ripped myself off with my movie Dig when when Matt is in the car and he's leaving Edward, there was a whole, page or two of dialogue that I would have loved to have that scene, but there was really no time. And so I explained to Matt that there was a million other things that he was going to have to do that day. And if he just took the camera back from Edward and leaned against the window, I could see Edward in the rear view, you know, and it would say it all in that scene. And and so that's what we did, and that's like the final shot in my movie Dig. So sometimes you just kind of like, you know, limitation can sometimes be a source of great inspiration in art, and I'm not recommending you try to shoot a movie in 19 days, but, and it was very challenging to shoot four different decades also, you know, in that time.
Yeah.
We had different wigs. I would call it a wig out, you know, when we would like have to change wigs. You know,
everything gets weird in the 80s, man. The 80s change everything, and it, I thought the music really flowed and made that transition. It just, the pairing of the music and the imagery was just like spot on. Like
I was going for a different color palette in every era too. And, you know, at one point I think Nancy was going to kill me because I was just, I mean, we're very good friends to this day, but it was like I was pushing her, you know, everything had to be side lit or silhouetted, and every period was a different color, you know, palette. Especially the 80s had to be really, really cool and blue and silver. And almost pasty, you know. He had made it. Mm-hmm. He had finally made it, but he was alone. And that and he was going to die alone, you know, and that's what it was going to be. And that was very important to me. So when we jumped 10 years in the film, it's very important that it kind of like, and that montage, you know, it's only in the director's cut that you see the HIV virus spreading, you know, with Ronald Reagan. And,
I think it was really successful. I'm sorry. I'm commenting on the color palette that you used for the different decades, and I did not notice that, and I usually do with different changes of color and light. It didn't take me out of the movie at all. I think that was a great choice, and I have to admit to you guys, I actually have the movie running right now with no sound. And I'm just kind of looking up at it and glancing at these beautiful details without the sound, which, you know, is kind of a, not a cheat, but, did you shoot this on film? Because
it
looks like you did.
Yes. It was very
really
important.
Makes a difference.
Yeah. The film aspect is like almost like another character in the film. It's the film, you know?
It
changes everything.
Is.
That's Super 16. And, it was really Steve Bellamy of Kodak, who I was speaking at an event at L.A. Independent, a film independent event in the desert. And and Steve Bellamy ended up seated next to me at a table. This was before I was making Mapplethorpe. And he said, if you don't shoot Mapplethorpe on film, it'll be a crime against humanity. And I said, well, then I guess you have to help me make that happen. I'd love to shoot it on film. So we did, and it was really funny because we had all these, like, you know, accounting sort of, okay, we had to prove to the investors it wasn't going to break the bank, because that is what people think about film, that it's going to break the bank. We did all these analysis and da-da-da. And then, ironically, we didn't even have time to shoot all the film. We had tons of film left over, because that was the problem, was actually no time. So, yeah.
So
but anyway,
the
Nancy Schreiber shot. What? What did you say?
I was going to say, what's the next project? Now you've got all this film.
I wish I did. But so Nancy shot, you know, incredible 16, and then I asked my office to ship me a bunch of Super 8 to go buy, like, 20 rolls of Super 8. Film, and I got my Super 8 camera, which I use in most of my documentaries. I shoot Super 8 myself, and so I kept it on the director's chair, and I just thought, you know what, with the amount of time and lack of time we have, we're going to need some peanut butter for the bread, so let me, you know, while Nancy's relighting, let me take the actors outside, and that's where you get those shots of them kind of dancing around the Chelsea Hotel, or if you see Matt lying in bed with Bunny or whatever. I was just shooting the actors in between. You know, on the way to set, I would shoot the Brooklyn Bridge, you know, or whatever. So that was kind of how we did it, you know. And it became, it would not be the same film without having been shot on Super 16 and Super 8, for sure.
Well,
yeah.
How about
and
the
Chelsea
Hotel?
Called,
I was going to say, how about a sequel called Mapplethorpe in Heaven?
What?
Maplethorpe. I said, did you make a sequel called Maplethorpe in Heaven? Like,
ooh.
Yeah. Ooh, it's angel
okay.
wings. Ooh, that, wouldn't that be cool? Like, that would be cool. But, yeah, the Chelsea Hotel, though, I mean, this is, like, legendary. And, you know, just having been raised out of this country, coming back here, and I was, like, in my late teens, going in my 20s, I just felt like Janis Joplin was still here, Jimi Hendrix mm-hmm. and everybody. And everywhere I went, that I don't know. I was just stuck in some weird time warp wanting these things to be true. And it's the Chelsea Hotel and Patti Smith. Patty's still mm. here, thank God. You know, but like there's that to me is just had this romanticism, and when I knew like that was going to be part of this, I was, you know, very exciting.
Well, you know, the Chelsea Hotel closed in 2000. Well,
yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what year they closed, but definitely before we shot. And I knew, I saw that it was going to close, and I checked in. I went to New York. I was there for something, and checked into the Chelsea Hotel, and I actually photographed every aspect of it, and then especially the wrought iron stairwell that was just a quintessential centerpiece of the entire place. And that's what we went after. We went all the way to Yonkers to finally found a stairwell that we could photograph that would bring the Chelsea Hotel back for us. So that was
wow. That's
what we did, and then we had to use visual effects on the windows and things like that. But we shot the Chelsea Hotel in Yonkers. Sorry to burst your...
Oh, man.
Yeah, sorry.
I know, but you know what I mean? But there's just that thing, you know? But, you know, it's like, oh, you know, those stories, and just Patti Smith is awesome, and I love, like, this cast is incredible. But
yeah.
The more incredible they are, that they're not getting to shoot this in sequence of the story. Like, and also, like, going... And now, because, you know, look at Matt Smith, you know, who's Maplethorpe, he is changing so much. I mean, and now he's dying. I mean, he became such a little person, you know. He went through a lot of transition and transformation in this.
What's your question about it? You just commented.
No, I'm just saying they really are a great cast. I mean,
Matt was, Matt read for the part back when Matt Smith would actually read for a part, and it was jaw dropping. But nothing could have prepared me for his performance. It was just unbelievable. And then
oh, it was really good.
And this is we cast him before The Crown. You know, it was not. Mm. He was not necessarily financeable at the point we cast him, but he was just right for the part. And then because it's low budget, we had to cast out of New York a lot of, local performers. So we really tapped Broadway and got some great actors, just theater actors. Judy Henderson was our casting director. She did a fantastic job. And, yeah, we found some real gems there, and everybody just brought their A game. It was beautiful.
I think Robert Maplethorpe looks like James Dean.
Yeah, definitely.
Cross with Jim Morrison in a weird way.
Features.
Yeah, I would have loved to Darth Maplethorpe meet. I think that would have been like a really interesting evening. I don't know how it would have happened, but it would have been interesting. But you know, shooting on a budget and being independent, right? Is you know, the film. Filmmaker, doesn't it really kind of make you do this extra layer away? I mean, I know it's harder, but sometimes I think that's when you get the diamonds, when it's harder to do.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, it's just, it really, limitation can often be a source of great inspiration because you just kind of end up pulling stuff out in the moment that you never even would have thought of, you know? So I think, and also, you know, the tension that you feel from Maplethorpe, I mean, a lot of that came from Matt, you know, just feeling pushed on time and just, you know, you can feel it. It's palpable tension, and he's an incredible actor and mercurial by nature, and that was important to my casting of him and has tons of gravitas, but the tension, a lot of it came from, you know, we shot the end first, so we shot Maplethorpe in the 80s in his loft. We had 3 days to shoot all of those scenes. So if I made a decision like I did, for example, when you cut to the 80s and you have him on the phone trying to contact Patty and he's like this caged animal, mm-hmm. you know, he's almost like jumps up on the windowsill and he's just kind of, well, we made a meal out of that, you know, like we, it was two lines of dialogue on the page. It was two lines of you know, hey, Patty, it's me, pick up the phone. That was it. It wasn't, there was no, you know, and then we ended up spending like 3 or 4 hours on that because I was just so, I could tell such an important moment, too, to really establish a whole new phase of his life. Well, then that meant that we had to kind of block shoot some of those photo shoots, you know, and squeeze everything else in. And so right off the bat, Matt was under great pressure. Plus, he was, had to lose, you know, 20-plus pounds for the part as he came off playing Prince Philip. And so he was already in a terrible mood for that. And then we put, like, clips and almonds and stuff in his loafers so that it was hard for him to walk and he could, you know, have the kind of the nerve damage that one gets when they're suffering from AIDS in advanced stages. So all of that happened in the first 3 days. And I had him die by day six so that he could come back and start eating cookies and things, you know. Special thanks to Levain Bakery. Yeah,
and peanut butter.
I wanted him to reverse so he could gain weight and be more, you know, youthful by the end. So.
Wow. And so, everyone, this is out on April 2nd to watch, but I did want to ask, what, you know, he was, you know, definitely controversial, right, in what he was showcasing, and he was one of the first people, he was a pioneer. And, you know, so when you look at his foundation, here he has this foundation, has also donated so much money, I think it was like $50 million to AIDS research and to different nonprofits, so they've done this huge amount of good. So I'm really glad you showcased them. Did you work with them on getting material and information?
Oh, yeah. They were crucial partners from the beginning. They, you know, they were believed in me. I had won Sundance twice, and they, you know, off that kind of reputation that I have in the documentary world, they believed in me to tell this story. Starting in 2009, they gave us the rights and or allowed us to option the rights. And then when I went to the Sundance Labs with the film in 2010, they sent me, and then the mentors there, people like Robert Redford himself, you know, challenged me to rewrite the script. And I contacted the foundation, and they sent me books upon books of his work. You know, work like comparing his work to Michelangelo and Rodin, for example. You know, that really influenced the script. Or an early works book that showed me his collage work and his drawings, which I wasn't really even aware of. You know, I'd read about it, but I didn't know. And that inspired me to write those scenes where you see him creating that work and Patty first getting a sense of his sexuality and that there was going to be, you know, a problem with their relationship continuing. So, so they were essential partners. And also, you know, when I pictured him actually spreading AIDS and knowingly spreading AIDS and that kind of fatal flaw, they stood by me on that, you know. They said, well, it's true, and Mapplethorpe wouldn't lie. Truth. Yeah.
Wow.
So,
that's awesome
that
they did.
But that's where the church comes in, too. I feel like there's a lot of internalized stuff there, you know, feeling like, and that's why I put those lines in of like, well, you know, they know what they're doing. We all made a deal or whatever, you know. I put in lines about kind of you can cheat death. You can cheat life, but you can't cheat death, you know.
That was perfect, by the way. I love that line.
I just put it in my own line. You can cheat. You can cheat life, but you can't. No, it's you can't cheat. Oh, fuck, I can't remember right now. Something which I won't. Yeah.
But we know, but everyone has to watch
it. But you can cheat life, which I won't.
That's it.
Jesus.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Everybody should. It's been a while.
Because that's
this is the original cut.
No,
you realize that, right? Like, this is the cut that I made.
I was going to say, now the Catholic Church is going to come after something, you know, but. No,
get me, you know. It's too late now.
But, it really is. showcasing, and I think what you're saying about your background, and, you know, being a documentarian is to bring that to life. You're bringing, you know, that's what I think really, it is a documentary, even though it's a film, it's a documentary, and when you make, you know, people come to life with their story, and whether you like their story or not, it's a good story, period.
Yeah.
I hope you get another Sundance with it. You'll see that I really tend to tell the stories of what I call impossible visionaries, people who take on the impossible at the time and then kind of act impossibly as a result of needing to kind of withstand the doubt and ridicule of people that don't understand what they're doing. And all of those kinds of people are the people that have pushed the boundaries and the edges of society. And they're the people that are, you know, most interesting to me. And I feel like, you know, you can't help but love them. Like, if I do a good job as a filmmaker, you can't help but appreciate them, even if they're doing things that are really making you lean in and question and are challenging, you know, the straight-ahead hero that he's not. You know, he's not that, but he is. He did incredibly meaningful work, and he advanced gay life in our culture, and he made photography a collectible art form, and, you know, he did these undeniable things. He made beautiful work. He also struggled with demons himself, you know, as we all do on some level, you know. So that's why it's important to me to kind of tell it as a three-dimensional story.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. I know you're twirling around with a gazillion interviews, showcasing your Mapplethorpe, the director's cut, is out on all digital platforms on April 2nd, so watch out for it. Watch it. And we want to thank you for joining us. We're going to close with some music. It's called Marsha in Pictures by Red Wedding, the band from Michael and Spider. You can get the song on bandcamp.com. Also, thank you, Tanya, for joining us. Keep up with Tanya at nationalparkartfoundation.org and keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Thanks, everybody. Here it is, Marsha in Pictures by Red Wedding. Take care, everybody.
Take care.
The war.